I'm Eric Mittenthal with the American Meat Institute, sharing my meat with the world, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By with Dave Lefkowitz and Rabbi Saul Solomon on UNC Radio.
Everybody, welcome, shalom. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon of Temple, Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And let me tell you, baseball has begun. It is that time of the year. And when I think of baseball, I think of big, long things. Not bats and not whatever disgusting thing you have in your heads. No, I'm thinking of hot dogs, the great American food. Frankfurter's hot dog, well, nothing really American about Frankfurter, the name. But we'll ask about this because we have with us in the neighborhood on the phone the Vice President of Public Affairs at the American Meat Institute. This is a man who knows his meat. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to hold it together. I promise, I promised God that I would hold it together in this interview. Please welcome Eric Mittenthal. Shalom, Eric.
Shalom. So glad to join you.
Yes, yes. So, how long? Now, what interests me is that you haven't always been a meat person. You used to be a TV news reporter. Is this true?
I did used to be a TV news reporter, but at the same time, I ate so much meat.
And you were not a gay man. We're talking actual cows and pigs and chickens. And
correct.
Yes. Right, okay. I'm just checking. That's all I'm asking. So, but really, how did you go from reporting on crime and hurricanes and, oh, there's a fire down the block. We better have that on TV because fire always looks good on the news, to firing up a grill?
Well, TV news doesn't exactly pay the bills, so needed to find something different, and the meat industry pays the bills, so I made a switch, and I get to talk about hot dogs and sausage now.
Now, wait a minute. I'm sorry for backtracking, but you were an on-camera television reporter. Is this true?
This is true.
And this did not... What bills do you... What are you, buying Mercedes?
I'm buying meat. It's not as glamorous as it looks to be. It's a very tough business, the TV business.
I guess it must. I mean, but it was a full time gig with I assume with benefits and stuff. I mean, if you're on TV and you're not paying your bills, that astonishes me. You know?
No, it's tough. They that's one of the hidden secrets of the TV business. They don't pay you a whole lot, especially if you're not a main anchor.
Right, so if you're just out in the field at 4 o'clock in the morning chasing something down, this they don't pay you for.
Right.
That's amazing.
Not much.
But you went from the reporting into marketing. Was that an easy transition?
Yeah, you know, we both talk and communicate and tell the story of what we're trying to tell. And so I went from telling random stories in different cities to telling the story of meat and hot dogs and sausage.
All right. Well, what is the story that you generally tell? I mean, what do you tell people about meat?
Well, meat's delicious, first of all.
Well, I can do that. I should have your job. Hey, everybody, meat is tasty. I love meat. Okay, good. Give me your job. No, tell me more.
You know, meat is a cultural phenomenon that brings us together. You know, everybody loves getting together, whether it's at a barbecue or, you know, at their backyard grills, you know, at restaurants. They love to eat meat, hot dogs, sausage, steaks, bacon. You know, it's an American favorite. And so my job is to make sure that we're telling the great stories of meat and particularly these days, hot dogs and sausages. You know, hot dogs and sausages are, despite their foreign origins, the quintessential American food these days.
Now, let me ask you, what is the difference? I have wondered about this. Is there a technical difference between a hot dog, a Frankfurter, and a sausage? What is it?
There is a little bit of a difference. It's mostly in the way the meat is ground and the seasonings that are used. You know, certain seasonings are typically used in hot dogs versus sausages, and that's kind of where the distinctive differences come in.
So do some places use them interchangeably? Or is a hot dog a real American sort of Frankfurter thing that we know?
Well, the hot dog originally started in Frankfurt, Germany, believe it or not. And,
well, it's a Frankfurter, it should.
Kind of Americanized. It's become kind of the American food because, you know, Americans have made it their own in terms of it, and you know, of course, eating it at baseball games. And so it's the American food now more than it is the European food.
Why do you think that took off so well in baseball games as opposed to, let's say, hamburger or sushi or you know, noodles? Why the hot dog?
Well, hamburger you have to eat with two hands. Mm-hmm. Sushi you have to eat with chopsticks, and certainly that's not easy at a baseball game. Noodles you have to eat with chopsticks or a fork. Hot dog you hold it in one hand, you take a few bites, and you've got it down, and you have a hand free to go for the foul balls as well.
I still think it would be great to have barbecue ribs in the games. Just have everybody get all sloppy and greasy and catching them. Then this way, no one could catch a baseball. Because all the kids, the ball would go flying into the stands. Everybody's hands would be covered with barbecue sauce and grease. It would fall on the floor and a little child would get it. I think that would solve a lot of problems. We would not have that, what was it, the Bill Buckner incident? No, that was the man. I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. But let me ask you, Eric Mittenthal, of the American Meat Institute, what are some of the more eccentric, unusual things that you have heard people put on their frankfurters, on their hot dogs?
Well, there's a lot of different things, especially at baseball games these days that teams are breaking out for their hot dogs. There's a crab mac and cheese dog in Baltimore.
Yes.
And so that's the ultimate non-kosher dog, but on there with Old Bay seasoning and mac and cheese as well. It's one of the more unusual ones. In Pittsburgh, they're putting pierogies on hot dogs, which is a good true Polish tradition.
Wait a minute, a pierogi is a little dumpling, right? A potato dumpling?
That is correct.
So they put how do they fit this on a hot dog?
I think they use mini pierogies, but they're able to fit them on there.
I don't know. I'm wondering. And then, of course, there's corn dogs. That's a tradition in world fairs and county fairs and places like that. What's the...
Big fans of meat on a stick. Meat on a stick is a good trend.
Now, what is your favorite way to eat a hot dog?
Well, I'm a southern guy. I'm from Atlanta. And so I like a hot dog from the Varsity down there. A good chili dog with onions and mustard is perfect to me.
Sounds pretty good. Now let me ask you, if people were to say, okay, what goes into your average hot dog of a decent variety, of a trustworthy brand, how much is meat and how much is stuff and how much is stuff that you really don't want to know?
100% is meat and 0% is stuff you don't want to know. That's a common misconception out there, and you know the old saying goes, there are two things you never want to see being made, and that's laws and sausages. And living in D.C., I can vouch for the law part. I don't want to see how those are being made, but the sausages are different. It's a pretty straightforward process. They're taking similar cuts of meat that are steaks. I mean, they're taking pieces off those, similar to what they would do for ground beef. And then they blend it together a little bit more fine than you would have in ground beef. They added different seasonings, put it in the casing, and that's a hot dog.
Well, I mean, the thing is, well, it wouldn't necessarily be all beef unless it said all beef. They will also use pork.
Yeah, I mean, it was same idea with pork as well. It's the different pieces off of you know, common pork cuts, and that's what would go into a pork dog.
But the,
or a mixture of pork and beef.
It's
always on the label. That's one thing. It's always on the label. So if you're getting a pork and beef dog, you would have both of those on the label. If you're getting a turkey dog, same idea.
But the thing, the old joke is, though, that say it is a pork dog, as it were, that they use everything but the oink. You know, it's like...
Yes, that's the old thing. But that's no longer the case.
It used to be. So the FDA stepped in, or how did it change from you didn't know what was in, you know, from sawdust to anything to being a trustworthy, meat-worthy frankfurter?
Well, it's one of those things where I think, you know, people had this impression of everything but the oink, and they were turned off by it. And so, you know, companies do everything they can to meet consumer demand, and if consumer demand says we don't want you know, everything but the oink, they're going to make sure that it's you know, meat that they're used to.
Now, how do you reconcile, as a person who represents meat in general in America. Reconcile that you have different brands that you particularly like and maybe not like. I mean, maybe you prefer, you know, Nathan's or Hebrew National or something. How do you make everybody happy?
Well, we don't, you know, certainly we work with certain brands, but our job is not to necessarily promote a brand. They have marketing departments for that. We promote the products, so we want to talk about hot dogs and sausage and meat, and we're talking more generally about the category as opposed to brands. And we recognize that everybody has their individual favorites. Certainly I do, and I'm sure you do too. And
Hebrew National!
He's recognized it as well.
Isaac Gellis!
Hebrew National,
oh, yes.
Yeah.
Is there a big difference between kosher hot dogs, God bless them, and your basic garden variety Goyisha hot dogs?
The primary difference is kosher hot dogs are all beef. Non-kosher hot dogs, you know, tend to have pork. Not necessarily they do, but you know, kosher hot dogs would be made from all beef or poultry, and they've been slaughtered. The meat has been slaughtered according to Jewish law. But they all contain high-quality cuts of meat.
One assumes, one hopes. Now let me also ask you about the names for these things. I mean, okay, Frankfurter, because they created the thing in Frankfurt, Germany. How did hot dog become hot dog?
That's a great mystery. One of the stories around that has to do with baseball, actually. The story goes that the vendors were selling hot dogs, and they were calling them your red hot dachshund sausages. And a reporter at the baseball game heard it, did not know how to spell dachshund, so he called them hot dogs. And that's one of the stories about how the hot dog first came about.
But also then you have the term wieners. So we now think of them with wiener dogs, but in that case, I think the dachshund is named after the Frankfurter rather than the other way around. Or is it because it's Vienna sausage? Where does wiener come from?
I think it's probably very similar. A dachshund is kind of known as a wiener dog, so same idea.
No, but again, is it the dachshund because it might have come from Vienna, Austria? Or is the dachshund named after the hot dog wiener? In which case, the wiener is already named the dog.
I think the dachshund came first.
Okay, well, yes, all right. It's a tautological argument, perhaps. My brain is smoking at the moment. We're talking, speaking of smoked things and smoked meats, with Eric Mittenthal, Vice President of the Public Affairs at the American Meat Institute. Another question, though. How do you, not just with hot dogs, but how do you counter the idea that meat in general, especially red meat, is not good for you? What do you say back to people who give legitimate arguments that say we really shouldn't be eating much meat?
Well, that's another common myth that's out there. We actually have a very good website called meatmythcrushers.com that takes on a lot of these myths, including the hot dogs and sausage, and that meat's not good for you. You know, these days people are looking for food that has the high in protein. There's no better food that brings you protein than meat, and so you know, protein is great for satiety.
Satiety meaning you feel full.
Satiety meaning, yep, the fuller you feel,
right.
It helps you feel full. The fuller you feel, the less you're going to eat. And so, you know, meat can contribute to a healthy diet in that way. And certainly there are lots of lean cuts of meat that do not provide a significant amount of fat in there. Certainly people are worried about the amount of fat. And, you know, there are plenty of cuts out there that are low fat and very healthy for you.
Well, I think also people with hot dogs specifically are worried about nitrates and things like that. I mean, has that been finessed or removed, or do you just say don't eat hot dogs 10 times a day every day and you'll be fine?
Well, nitrate's actually a really interesting topic. You may not know this, but you get far more nitrate from your diet from vegetables than you ever would from a hot dog. And so you know, hot dogs do contain nitrate as part of the curing process, and all cured meats would contain that. But there have been a lot of studies that show that nitrate has helped benefits as opposed to being a health hazard. So,
what benefits do you get from a nitrate?
What's that?
What benefit do you get from eating a nitrate?
Oh, you're getting a little past my expertise on that.
All right, I'm just wondering. I mean, does it make you a better lover or something like that, or what? You hope. Well, yes.
Yeah, it's one of those things that contributes to healthy cells and to healthy function. And so it's a lot of ongoing research around that area right now, determining exactly what are the health benefits of nitrate.
And let me also ask you, though, we've countered the people who say that you shouldn't eat much meat. And what do you say to, I guess, the enemy, as it were, vegans and vegetarians? Do you try to win them over, or is it sort of like Democrats trying to win the Tea Party over? It's hopeless.
Well, we're believers in choice. If people choose to not eat meat, that's their choice. They're certainly in the minority, and I can't relate to them. But you know, that's their choice, and I think we have the choice in this country to eat lots of meat too, and a lot of people like to do that as well. And so, you know, our job is to promote the benefits of meat to people and help them understand that, you know, meat is a delicious, healthy thing for them to be a part of their diets.
Well, let me ask, how often, Eric Mittenthal, do you eat meat over the course of a week?
Well, I eat meat with pretty much every meal.
Gewalt!
Much at breakfast, because I'm kind of a bagel guy at breakfast, so sometimes maybe a bagel sandwich with some sausage on there, but I'm a sandwich guy for lunch, so I'll go get a sandwich or a hot dog or a hamburger or something like that for lunch, and then give me a piece of steak for dinner. I'm set.
Now, as much as I am like you and agree with you, how's your health? How's your blood pressure? Are you overweight? I mean, I don't have you in front of me. I'm wondering, how are you?
Well, I'm in great shape. I'm 6'5", so
I didn't have any
growth problems, and I'm 6'5", about 195 pounds, so I think I'm doing pretty well.
And you must also, with all the meal stuff, do you get to try a lot of different, are people constantly bringing you new meats to try and new cured things?
Not as much new, but we get to try a lot of different brands' products in terms of their offerings and different sausages and things like that. Yeah, we definitely get to eat well here at the American Meat Institute.
Well, let me ask you about, I'm not talking about endangered species, but some of the meats that would not be as common. I mean, we talk poultry and steak and all that and pigs, but have you tried, and what do you think of some of the more unusual things that they make, you know, steaks out of?
Some of the unique things out there these days. I think that once again goes back to choice.
But I'm asking your particular. Have you tried, like,
for my particular?
Yeah. Have you tried?
I've had buffalo. Buffalo is about the extent of what I've gone. I've tried elk before. I think that's pretty much the extent of. I don't really like it when it's really gamey. So I'm not an exotic meat guy.
Okay, just because there is actually in Colorado, there's a sausage place out here that takes great pride in the fact that they make their sausages with these kind of all different elky things and buffalo things and stuff like that, and stuff you're like, oh my goodness, I've never tried that before. But the problem is, when it's in a sausage, there's so much spice on it, you're not really tasting whatever the hell you're eating. It's just, you know, sausage. So
I wouldn't be afraid to try any of it, but sometimes it's not as tasty as some of the more mainstream items.
Now, are you also involved in poultry at the Meat Institute, or is that something else entirely?
We do turkey. There's a separate chicken council that handles.
There's a chicken council. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Associations
for everything.
Well, when you think about chickens and cows, the other charge that has been leveled at the industry is cruelty to animals and the way that they're kept and fed and bred and basically penned in their entire lives, fattened up and then slaughtered. I mean, have you guys responded to this idea that meat is murder.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually developed several years ago an animal welfare audit. All of our companies utilize it to evaluate their systems to make sure that they are treating animals well. And the audit was designed by Temple Grandin, who is actually hopefully familiar to folks there in Colorado. She's a professor at Colorado State University, one of the most world-renowned animal welfare experts.
Oh, right. I've heard that name. Yes, honestly. And not just because I always go to Temple. Yes. There's a joke there. Okay, thank you. So good. So there are these things. Are things changing, though? Because you do see the way slaughterhouses are depicted in documentaries and the way the chickens can't move and the razor wire and all these horrible... I mean, has there been movement forward over the past 10 years?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we definitely, since we've developed the audit, there's been a lot of improvement in the way animals are cared for. And certainly a lot of the videos that you see online from the animal activists are showing you a certain perspective that isn't necessarily how plants are run. And so we've actually created a video of a beef plant to show exactly how animals are slaughtered at a beef plant. That's available on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/meatnewsnetwork. So when people are curious about how these things happen and, how animals are treated, we are actually able to show it.
Well, have you moved closer and closer to the kosher style of killing, which us Jews are very proud of?
Well, kosher is one way to do it, and it involves a rabbi being present for the process. It just depends on whether a plant's trying to keep their food kosher or not.
Well, it's more than the rabbi. It's also about the way, the quickness with which the slicing and the whatevering is done, I'm assuming.
Right.
It's
the way that the animal is actually slaughtered.
Sometimes they put him in an electric chair, they read him a story first. It's very, they're trying to be more humane about it. I'm kidding. Not a laugh there. One more question or two for Eric Mittenthal of the American Meat Institute. What's the latest news? Whatever happened to Mad Cow?
Well, Mad Cow hasn't been an issue here in the U.S. It's we've taken a lot of steps to ensure that. That is not an issue here, and so we haven't seen any typical cases of there was one atypical strain that popped up last year that researchers believe was an anomaly that just kind of popped up, but it has not been a significant issue in the U.S.
And you're not
certainly,
you guys don't deal with the international. You are just basically concerned with American beef and well, it is the American Meat Cow Institute, so there you go, I guess. So Mad Cow.
And we certainly work with international trade and are monitoring developments internationally. And in certain parts of the world, it's still somewhat of a concern. We do not currently import beef from Europe because of concerns over BSE or Mad Cow disease. And so, but that's something that our government monitors very closely to ensure that beef is safe for American consumers.
So, but it's good that we don't have to worry about mad cow, because I've seen some pretty angry sheep, which is...
That's right.
There you go. Oh, good, I got a laugh. That's exciting. So last question for Eric Mittenthal, and you've been a very good sport, I will say. What are some ideas, specific ones, in ads or marketing or promos that you guys have used, that you've come up with either in commercials or what have you, to say how wonderful meat is?
We actually aren't the ones who do the marketing. There are specific the farmers come together to market their specific commodities. So you have a beef group and a pork group and a dairy group, there is two, and so their job is to market. Our job is to tell the story and make sure people understand what meat is and what hot dogs and sausage are.
Oh, is there a byproducts group? I'm always kind of curious about what the hell meat byproducts are and what are those and where do they go?
That's a good question. I don't think there is a byproducts group, although there is a group for everything, so there might be.
There might be. Maybe it goes to China, you know. So, can I ask you, what is the, I know I keep tacking on one extra question, but I keep thinking of these things. What is the so terrible about horse meat? Anytime you watch a thing, is, oh, they were using horse meat instead of that. I mean, it's cheaper, I guess. But what's so wrong with using horse meat?
Well, horse meat is, in the U.S., it is seen as, you know, horses are seen as pets and friendly animals, and so they are not seen as food here. But in three quarters of the world, horses are seen as a food animal, and so for those places where it's culturally acceptable, there's absolutely nothing wrong with horse meat. You know, they have their own standards for slaughter, and in the U.S., there's just not a demand for it, and so you know, people don't want it here, and so we don't have horse meat here.
And not to be cliche, but also in the Asian markets, the stereotype is that somewhere in there, there's dogs and cats. I mean,
yeah, no, that is a common stereotype, and you know, in different parts of the world, you know, people eat different parts of the animal, and that's just how their culture you know, handles eating animals, and our culture is a little different.
Well, all I can say is, when it comes to eating horse, just say nay. I'm sorry.
Right.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking with the delightful Eric Mittenthal of the American Meat Institute. You had mentioned the website before that had myths about the meat and that people can check. Well, what is that site again?
It's meatmythcrushers.com.
Meat Myth Crushers. So if you want your meat crushed, this is the, well, your meat, I don't know what I'm saying. Anywho, Mr. Mittenthal, it has been really a pleasure to talk to you, and I thank you so much for bringing your meat into our lives.
My pleasure.